This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent. Match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Nice work there, Dan Ball. Bravo. Good stuff.
Thank you, thank you.
It's tough when you hear it like all back-to-back like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was only three of them. There's been more.
Oh, there's definitely.
There's like probably like a half dozen more that you probably 100%. Could have thrown in there. But we only have so much time in the show.
Dysfunction Junction.
It's very good. I still think this last one was the worst. I think it was worse than calling the team soft. I think it was worse than we won a bunch of Super Bowls doing it the other way. I think it was the worst misnomer. I don't know if misnomer is the right thing. The worst quote that he's had to walk back all season was this past one.
I think it's the worst because it was conduct unbecoming, attacked a subordinate, mm-hmm. like a lot of things. I still think the early on stuff with Judon and Godshaw and the whole, we want players to have opinions and share them in the media, and then 2 days later, we would just like to keep stuff in-house. That's right. Our philosophy. Wait, your philosophy the other day was not that. You mm-hmm. just, totally different philosophy.
Very different philosophy.
And that was true. In the infant stages of the football team. Mm-hmm. So there was value in that. This
is why it's worse, though, because yeah. we're 15 weeks in.
Yes.
You know, in the first couple of weeks, his first week ever as a head coach. He should be learning and getting better at these things. He's gotten worse.
And when the going gets tough, Gerard drives a bus over you. Like, that's how I would take it.
Right.
You know, true leaders, I've always said, like, anybody can lead when you win. Any level, any sport. If you win, you could be a leader. I could be a leader. Stiz can be a leader. But when you're losing and you're having problems, that's when leadership, true leadership, bubbles to the surface.
It's true.
And others get exposed.
Yeah. Mike Reese today, he tweeted this about 9:05 a.m. Says, cleaning out the notebook from the Patriots' 30-17 loss to the Cardinals and sharing some big picture thoughts on the team. Reese does this every week.
Yeah.
He has his Sunday morning column on ESPN Boston or ESPN.com. And then on Monday or Tuesday, it's usually Tuesday, he comes out with this, cleaning out the notebook from whatever game we just watched. And here is his first bullet point from cleaning out the notebook. And this is Mike Reese, again, we're talking about here. All right? Not Mike Giardi. Right?
Oh, what does that mean?
I mean that Mike Giardi's more likely to write something like this than Mike Reese.
Stink, stank, stunk Giardi?
Kind of, yeah. All right, so here's what Mike Reese wrote. First bullet point. One of the best parts about football is that you most often get out of it what you put into it. Right, sure. So after watching the Patriots' uninspiring 30-17 loss to the Cardinals in Arizona and then rewatching the game upon returning home, I came away with this thought. The Patriots got what they deserved.
Ouch, babe.
It was an unacceptable performance for a team coming off a bye, and there should be genuine soul-searching at all levels of the organization for how a team with a Patriots logo on the helmet could allow that to happen.
You know what my head heard at the end of that paragraph?
What?
I'm not mad. I'm disappointed. That's what it sounded like to me.
It does. I mean, yeah, it really does. That, for Mike Reese, is maybe the hottest take he's ever had. Like, I mean, that's, you know, that's very, that's strong for him.
It's broken him.
That is strong from him.
He's done with this crap.
Yeah.
No more Mr. Nice Guy Mike Reese.
Mike Reese isn't necessarily one of these reporters who's jamming his opinion in there, like, at all, really. I mean, he'll tell you what's going on. He'll tell you the backstories of the player. He's a very good reporter. He's about as good as it gets when it comes to just the facts and the details and the sources and all of that. This was a take. I mean, this was a sports radio take here.
Especially the all levels of the organization part, to me, was the most notable.
You got what you deserved. An unacceptable performance coming off a bye, and there should be soul-searching at all levels of the organization for how a team with a Patriots logo on the helmet could allow that to happen.
That means I'm looking up at you, Robert and Jonathan, and straight on down. Not just you, all levels, but he is definitely including ownership in that criticism.
The next one is a little bit more pointed, and it's pointed towards Jerod Mayo. Number two, the number of fundamental breakdowns were staggering for a team that had a bonus practice last week and also worked in full pads on Wednesday. Poor angles, edges, and tackling on defense stood out the most, especially for more experienced players like Jelani Tavai, Anthony Jennings, Jabril Peppers, and Kyle Duggar. It also sparks questions about coaching because defense, after all, is Jerod Mayo's expertise.
I'll say it again. Ouch, babe.
Ouch. Ouch, Mike. Mike, leave some for the vultures. I mean, my guy, he's picking them clean here.
I'd like to report a murder.
Seriously. Patriots were never in control of the game. Their time of possession was among their season lows. That's what going 0 for 6 on third down and 1 for 2 on fourth down gets you, and on defense allowing 10 of 15 on third down. While most would agree the Patriots need an upgrade in talent in certain areas, like offensive line, receiver, and front seven, that alone is not an excuse. Lesser talented teams can still trend in the right direction at the end of the season by playing with passion, smarts, and togetherness, implying that this team is playing with neither passion, smarts, nor togetherness, which, once again, for Mike Reese, is scorching. I mean, really, these
100%.
Are scorching criticisms.
Is any of it unfair?
Not at all.
Unwarranted?
Absolutely not.
Without evidence?
No.
Right, he gives the evidence.
It's all right there.
He gives you...
He backs it up.
You know, you had an extra practice, but you did this, and this is what this shows. Like, that's very Mike Reese-style reporting, but we're not used to it being so, I would say, biting and so negative, and that's what this team has done, brought him to this point. And this is Mike Reese that's been around a long time.
Yes.
Remember, we played the Paul Perillo clip from Six Rings where he's like, the dream would be like 93, where you win five games down the stretch. You sucked all year, but you built some momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Reese was around back then. He was young, but he was around back then.
He was writing the Reese's pieces back then, right?
He might have even been before that.
Maybe before then. Yeah.
But, you know, he was a young guy.
That's the first thing I remember from him.
It was. Yeah. He had like the original blog.
Yeah.
He was one of the original bloggers in the world of football. But he saw those examples of what late season momentum can be. Ross Tucker kind of brought this up.
Yeah.
Like, you can be a crappy team, but still do things late in the year for either personal level or team level or unit level, build some positivity. They're building nothing. They are building, I mean, I guess the run game would be the one thing I might pull out and say they ran the ball relatively well on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, there's no obvious signs of improvement, encouragement. Some of the young guys that we wanted to see, you still want to see Jalen Polk, do you now? What did you say?
Again, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
I've seen enough of him. He was out there for 20 snaps. He might as well have not played at all.
Right. So, and I get this, because I do believe Mike Reese is emotionally tied to the Patriots. Like, mm-hmm. you can't cover a team for as long and as closely as he has.
Right.
And
he's in with the group, you know, like everybody talks to him.
Everybody talks to him, but more importantly, he talks to everybody.
Right.
He doesn't just say, I'm going down there this week, I'm going to talk to Mayo, maybe I'll get Gonzo. He talks to every practice squad, or he wants the story behind the story, the getting to knows, all of the minutiae. When you're that embedded, I guess?
Yeah, no, that's the word I
like,
would use. Yeah.
You would care more. Like, you see all these people as coworkers, as faces, and people you've talked to all the time, and it sucks.
Yeah. It's
right
bad. He has a couple
They've
other ones.
Him.
A couple other ones that are equally as scathing. He talks about how the Patriots couldn't get to Kyler Murray and how they didn't even have a QB hit in the game. He says that was maddening to watch. What was the other one? There's a whole bunch of these. Vidarian Lowe, questionable for the game. Tough day for him, and a reminder of how left tackle is a top position of need and how the signing of Chukwuma Okorafor, who left the team, was the biggest misstep from the Elliott Wolf-led front office. Just not good enough. No one escapes.
Nope.
Like, no one escapes the wrath.
Sprinkler
of
offense here. He was a
yeah. Like, remember playing Contra? Like the spread gun? He's got the spread gun going.
Do you know you can order flamethrowers online?
I did not know that.
I was looking for like a blowtorch item that I saw, so I Googled it. You can legit order flamethrowers.
Really?
And I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of intrigued.
Okay.
$3,500. That's not that bad.
Oh, I found one for a flamethrower.
That's a couple Christmas How much you find yours for?
I thought I saw one for $475, and I was actually thinking
if $475.
If they do refund me for the abominable,
or a flamethrower.
Redirecting of that money might be nice for a flamethrower.
I got $495 and free delivery.
Look at that right there.
What do you need a flamethrower for?
It's a great question.
Why do you not need a flamethrower?
For snow removal?
Wasn't it the great JFK who said something to that effect?
Ask not.
You ask why, I ask why not.
Ask what the flamethrower can do for you.
You don't think it'd be cool, like, weeds in your driveway, or like, honey, you're going to weed whack? Nah, I'm going to flamethrower.
Nah, I'm going to burn down the neighborhood, actually.
That same idea with the leaves last month. And
well, I'm going to wait till
my neighbor snitched on me.
You know, it's rained a few times, maybe have a little more moisture in the air.
I do think we're out of that dry period.
Yeah, I don't think we're in the red flag zone anymore. You wouldn't want a flamethrower?
Probably not.
Or how about, here's this. So you have a son.
Yes.
It snows.
My two-year-old gave him a flamethrower.
No. It snows.
Yeah.
So you build a snowman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you melt the snowman.
All right. That's a pretty good
thing. Because nothing bad can happen. I'm just melting a snowman.
Sure.
I mean, make sure your wife, like, has a hold of your son or something so he doesn't run across.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, listen, I've never handled a flamethrower before.
Oh, I haven't either.
I don't know how they work.
I haven't either.
Sure.
But I get a little pyrotechnic in me.
Uh-huh. You mean a pyromaniac?
Pyromaniac.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, pyromaniac.
Pyrotechnic
means
you're into, like...
You're on the stage.
On stage with flames and stuff like that. That's pyrotechnic.
Similar.
Same thing. Same idea. Pyro. You got the pyro part.
But I would like a flamethrower. If anybody's looking for... Are we doing gifts?
Yeah, we're doing gifts. I'm not getting you a flamethrower.
Yeah. Hit up your boy Elon.
Are we doing like a Yankee swap, or what are we doing as a show?
I don't know. Let's talk about it after.
All right. Okay.
Hey, screw you.
What are you, my wife again? Your son, a lot like my wife today.
We'll talk about it later. Okay. We're not going to make a scene here in this restaurant. 617-779-7937. We see your phone calls lined up. We will get to them right after Dan Ball gets you caught up on what's trending.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Drake May with us yesterday talking about Alex Van Pelt, and that clip got around, as you mentioned earlier. A lot of aggregators picked that one up as Drake May, after the game, joined the chorus of people questioning not necessarily the entirety of Alex Van Pelton's job status and everything. It was very specific. It was about that one sequence on third and fourth down, third and one, fourth and one, where they handed it off to Gibson. Then on the fourth and one, they handed it off to Ramondre Stevenson. Didn't pick up the yards. Nope. Although, I was watching Early Edition last night. I'm glad I'm not alone. Tom Giles, Trenny, all of them were like, yeah, I thought Gibson picked up the first down, too. So I'm not crazy. Other people thought that, too. They didn't show a replay of it. All they did was cut to the sideline, and I guess we're like, hey, how come Mayo and Van Pelt, no one's challenging this? Shouldn't they challenge this or at least call for a measurement or something like that, which they didn't, which in retrospect they should have, because I saw it again, and I very clearly thought on the second effort that he got there. He got across the line. It seemed obvious to me. And they just said, nah, and I just handed off again. But that's not even what this is about. It was about, well, why didn't Drake May sneak it? Why isn't he doing, QB power run up the middle? And he talked about it. He said, it's tough for a big 6'5 dude to get tackled. And, I'm a big, tough guy, and I can do this. And good question. He pointed out how great of a question he thought it was. And I think that Mayo, with you said it, not me, the crafts and the play calling is terrible and all of that. I mean, it all is pointing towards Alex Van Pelt, which is very unfair.
And Alex Van Pelt will speak on, Thursday is the usual day for coordinators?
Yes.
I believe. And then I don't think he'll be with Jones and Keefe because they rotate, and I believe he was on last week because this would have been an interesting...
This would have been the best time to...
Line of discussion.
Yeah. Absolutely.
With him. Now, you mentioned a measurement, too. You know what else a measurement would allow for?
What?
The head coach to talk to the offensive coordinator about what they want to do if they didn't get the first down.
Good point.
Right?
Yeah.
That's where you can say, why don't we use Drake?
Buys you a little time. Yeah.
Like, discuss the situation and how you want to handle it. It's just, I really do start to feel bad for Alex Van Pelt. And some of that is, yes, he's the dad jeans nice guy. Some of it is also, other than Drake May, he might be the best thing this offense has.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's done a pretty good job. He's taken early in the year, he made do with what he had with Jacoby Brissett and that offensive line and that offense. And later in the year, he got a quarterback that could do some different things, and they've gotten marginally better. So Alex Van Pelt should not be the guy in the crosshairs. And I know he's in Jonathan's crosshairs. He's in some fans' crosshairs. It's to the point where I think we need, like, a flyover at Gillette that says, save Alex Van Pelt.
Oh, yeah, like they did at a Giant Stadium with the Mr. Mara, please fire everybody.
Yes.
Get one of those planes with the message behind it.
But let's do fire everyone but Van Pelt.
Save Alex.
Yeah. Because like, I feel
save
bad Ferris, for him.
Put it up on the lights.
Yeah. He's getting scapegoated.
He is. It seems like they're paving a path for that to happen, and I think that's chicken
feed, I would
honestly.
Feel guilty. If I were Elliott Wolf, if I were Jerod Mayo, if I were other guys that, if I'm being honest and I look in the mirror and I look at the stat sheet and I look at the results, I know he did a better job than I did.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Jerod Mayo, you have to know in the totality of this year that you've been employed as the head coach and he's been employed as the offensive coordinator, he's better at his job than you've been at your job.
Yeah.
Right?
Agreed.
Fact.
And he's not been good, but he's been better than you.
But he's been better than you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's been good enough, but he's been better than you. And he's going to lose his job while you get to stick around. Why? Because you went to Israel 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't get invited. Maybe Alex would have gone to Israel, too, if you had invited him.
He would have had the best speech in that airport, boy.
Right.
You have no idea.
I don't even know who he worked for back then, but I'm sure he would have taken a free trip to Israel at the time.
Mm-hmm. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones here. A lot of you waiting patiently to talk Patriots. Let's start with Tony in Bridgewater. He's been waiting the longest. Go ahead, Tony.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How you doing?
Listen, this is like... Ken, you were saying about Belichick, and maybe he lost a little of his fastball, but I got to tell you something. For 2 decades, this defense hasn't looked that bad. I hope Kraft's listening to this station right now, because he's the guy responsible for all this crap. Because you pick a GM, the GM picks the coach picks the assistants, not backwards. The owner don't pick the coach, then backdoors a guy in. He didn't even do interviews for the GM job. You got assistants that aren't qualified. It'd be like this. Someone calls you today and says, we'll give you $2 million a year to run Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take $2 million, even
Bet
though you don't
ass.
Know what the hell you're doing.
It's right into the
All
ground.
Right, this is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this whole thing is on crap. It's not on these guys. Mayo's not qualified to be a coach. He's never coached.
Yeah, you're right, Tony. I mean, listen, I can't argue with any of that. The way the Kraft's constructed all of this was half-assed. I mean, it was a half-assed, half-measure-filled bleep show, and that's what it was the entire every step of the way. Basically, the only thing about Mayo is that there was so much like. They just believed in him so much, and they made that such a cornerstone of everything that was going to be coming next year is that, yeah, we got this guy. We got our head coach. We've known for years that this is who we want. This is a decision that we're making, and we're standing 10 toes down on this decision, and we're very sure about this. And then rather than treating it that way, like this is our guy, but we got to bring him along, they acted like he's been a coach for 15 years. Yep. Like he's been a head coach and that he knows the ropes and that all this other stuff. He can bring these coordinators along who've never done it before, and it's an inexperienced GM who's worked in front offices but hasn't been the GM before, and he's going to be working with him as well. And you do that when you have an experienced coach who can handle all of this and who has experience and sort of muscle memory when it comes to the off seasons and drafting and on the field and all this other stuff. But when they're all learning everything on the job at the same time, what the bleep did you expect was going to happen?
And that's the bigger issue for me. I actually don't have a huge issue with the Mayo hire, the gut story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't love it that your gut told you that before he'd coached a single NFL game, even
right.
as an assistant, but whatever. You see something special in him. I said it to you yesterday. Bill Belichick clearly saw something in him as well. So I think there's something there with Jerod Mayo. But then to believe you compounded that mistake by having no support, no structure, no credibility around him. It was like you slapped him on the bum and said, good luck. And then kind of just walked away.
Yeah.
And
basically said, go figure it out.
Right. Let him drown.
Yeah.
And that's the part that's more on them. Even if he was naive and thought he knew more. You know more. You've coached. I mean, you've worked with Bill Parcells, with Pete Carroll, with
right.
Bill Belichick. You've had to hire what's his name when you thought Bill was going to be suspended to be the coach in waiting, the old guy from the Panthers, Dom Capers.
Oh yeah,
like you've been around the NFL business, the world, the machine for 30 whatever years, 40 years. You knew that it's hard to win, it's easy to lose, that things go sideways. And you just kind of let Gerard dangle in the breeze.
True.
Yeah, I don't. That's the part that truly bothers me more than anything.
And it should. And they should feel bad about this. I mean, I don't know if they do.
This is on them.
It is on them.
Mike Reese is right. Soul searching at all levels of the organization. Not just the coaching level, not just the playing level, not just the executive level for the roster. All levels. Yeah. Mike Reese is correct.
And there's more to it than just taking notes about the play calling and sitting up there and, you know, plotting all that out or whatever.
That's a pimple on the bum of this team.
The philosophy, the whole thing. You know, I mean, it's really the whole approach to it was so weird. I mean, it was very, very weird. Let's get rid of Bill.
Flawed.
Let's maintain the Patriot way, though, and keep all these other people around instead of what you should do and what most teams do. And it doesn't always work, but generally, you tear it down and you start over and you let somebody build up a new program. You don't just try and continue the old one that crashed and burned with people who aren't as good as the guy that you fired. I mean, that's basically what they did.
Sure, but even if you had wanted to continue the old one, if you had told me Bill O'Brien was staying as the offensive coordinator and Steve Belichick was staying as the defensive coordinator, at least I'd say, well, the guys who called plays last year are still going to be calling plays.
And then maybe
they've
you're
done it.
Five-win team this year instead
of
three.
Oh, I'm not saying it's better.
That's all, yeah.
But it's a more structured environment, I guess.
As opposed to,
you know, Alex Van Pelt arrives and he's like, yeah, we're going to do what Cleveland did. I'll figure this out and I'll put something together. And all of it is just ill-conceived, ill-prepared. It's why I continue to go back to the worst decision I ever saw that was predictably putrid was Matt Patricia.
Yeah.
And then this is sort of the second time that this has happened.
This is like Matt Patricia-ing the whole staff.
This is going to fail. It looks like it's going to fail. Yeah. And it failed.
Well,
what'd you expect? You set it up to fail.
Absolutely. Steve is in Fall River. Hi, Steve.
I just want to make sure I have it right. Uh-huh. Alex Van Pelt now is better. He's the best, brightest bulb in the world. And he's getting credit. He's getting a pass because he's got lousy players to deal with.
No.
But Gerard Mayo doesn't get that pass.
Who's done their job better, Alex Van Pelt or Gerard Mayo?
Because Alex Van Pelt is only half the team and has Drake May, then by default it's Alex Van Pelt.
Okay.
But guess what?
So did he have Drake May when he won week one? Did he have Drake May in week one when he won? That was weird.
That wasn't anything to do with the Patriots. That was to do with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Oh, so you have an answer for everything.
It has nothing to do with the Patriots.
That's weird.
They
thought the Patriots won.
They could play the Cincinnati Bengals for the next 20 weeks, and they wouldn't win one game, okay? 20 times they could play.
But on this night.
They wouldn't win a game. Let's not get bogged down in that.
Oh, we're bogged.
The problem is the crafts, and the problem is Elliott Wolf putting this team on the field and giving it to these guys, giving it to a first-year head coach, giving it to all these people. Mike Reese, you told me Mike Reese is a long. He's been there since 97.
Steve, your phone is just brutal, so I'm going to hang up on you. But I think we fundamentally agree. I think we fundamentally agree with who the problem is. Whether you want to nitpick about who's doing a better job between Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt or whatever, fine. I don't think anybody's really doing backflips for any of these guys.
No. He's not that good!
Right.
It's true.
But in the grand scheme of things, if you're to rank the coaches and coordinators, Alex Van Pelt's number one right now. And that's it. I mean, you know, yeah, Mayo doesn't have much to work with either, but at least on the defense, you can say that was a good defense last year with a lot of the same personnel. Hell, Bill Belichick said that about a dozen times on the various media platforms that he works for right now. And it's true. Did it all get worse because Gerard Mayo's worse at scheming than Bill Belichick? I think that played into it, sure. And I think that offensively, you're probably step back from Bill O'Brien that you were from Alex Van Pelt. But it hasn't really made much of a difference. It was a bottom-of-the-barrel offense last year. It's a bottom-of-the-barrel offense this year. But we are a little bit more okay with it because he's bringing along your rookie quarterback and it seems like he's doing an okay job at that. And that's it. I mean, that's really it. That's the one thing that sort of tips the scale in his favor.
You think Bill will take note at how poorly the safeties are playing?
Yes.
I don't think he will.
Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
You don't think he's going to notice that?
Who's the safeties coach?
Oh, good point.
I don't think he'll be throwing the safeties under the bus.
Good point. I didn't think of that.
Mm.
Yeah, you're right.
Because he picks and chooses his critiques.
That's true, he does. All right, well, now it's a little after 4:30.
You know what time it is?
Andy Hart, I don't know what time it is. You tell me.
It's time for you to go on the clock.
Whoa!
On the
could be a train wreck, just an FYI.
All right, good. What does this mean? I'm on the clock.
So, we are going to try a new segment where one member of the show, unbeknownst to him, is put on the clock.
Okay.
And asked a certain question with 60 seconds to answer.
Okay.
And some maybe, I don't know, stressful countdown and music to go along with it.
Is this like a trivia game or you're asking me like a philosophical question? Like what's
could be anything.
Okay.
It's a minute to win it, baby.
Okay.
Or you could fail, crash, and burn, and we could mock you for the next hour and a half to close out the rest of the show.
Okay. Sounds
great. Your choice. You decide.
Well, I don't know what the question is.
Andy Hart, you pose the question, and then we will start the game.
Christian Arcand.
Yes.
Let's pretend that the NFL is expanding, and your New England Patriots, the team of which you are the general manager, must come up with a list of 10 players that are protected in the expansion draft. The 10 players you cannot afford to lose to another team because they are the foundation of your team, and that is your task that starts.
The game begins in 3, 2, 1.
I don't know if I can even think of 10, but I definitely can think of 2.
You got a 10. You need 10.
Drake May, number 1.
And that's 2. 10.
Drake May.
Okay, you got 1.
Gonzalez.
Okay, you got 2.
Ugh. That stay and that you want to keep just away
foundation
from an expansion.
Yes, you want to hold on. Keeper league. You want to hold on to these guys. It's the backbone of your organization, your culture, your roster, your locker room.
Hunter Henry is my 3rd one.
Got 3. Somebody writing these down?
Kay. I'm writing them down here. Let's see. Marcus Jones. I'll keep Marcus Jones.
Ooh, he's got 4.
That's 4.
Where's the clock at?
About 20.
I need 10.
Keon White. I don't love what he's done this year, but he's young.
He's got 5.
And he does still, I think, have some potential there. That's 5. I'm halfway done.
Speed
all right.
Round Arcan.
Let's see.
Just start shooting names out.
5.
How about Juwan Bentley?
Not make it.
Juwan Bentley, I'll take. What'd I get? 6?
You got 6.
I think that's the only 6 that I want to keep.
The sucky 6.
I don't think I want any more than that. Maybe I'll throw Pop Douglas in there.
You can't throw anybody. The clock went off.
All right, fine. Clock's off. Forget it then.
No,
I don't need any of the offense back. I'll take an entirely new offense for Drake May outside of Hunter Henry and occasionally Marcus Jones. But yeah, that's it. Those are the only 6. And I don't even. Keon White, I'd take or leave too at this point.
Yeah, I know.
I don't even know if I could. These 6 are legitimate. That's the most I can come up with. I don't really care about keeping any of these guys. Protecting them from an expansion draft? Like, oh no, what if someone else signed them away? What do you think? I'm going to be upset if they've signed away Pop Douglas? Like, no, go ahead, take them. I don't care. Wow. There's really only like 3 names on this list that I would legitimately feel bad about keeping or feel bad about losing. And in terms of who I'd keep, I mean, come on. You know, like anybody could go. Anybody could go except for Drake May and Gonzalez, really. I mean, that's really what it's all about.
I'd like that old joke, take my wife, please.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Did
you feel any stress?
A little bit. I mean, everybody feels stress at the end of a countdown.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yeah. All right. I was
into that.
It's
something we could do moving forward?
Sure.
Now, the key is we want to do it like the person doesn't know. Like, blind.
Like you don't know it's coming.
Spontaneously.
And all of us.
Yeah.
Like, we could ask Stiz, like, you know, 10 best flavors of ice cream. Go.
Mm-hmm. Banana, coffee, cookie dough.
Banana?
Oh, it's my favorite.
It's one of his best takes.
Richardson's ice cream.
You
Richardson's
started with
banana
ice cream?
Oh, dude. Richardson's banana ice cream on 114 in Middleton. No chunks of banana.
Oh, it's smooth. It's just banana flavor.
Yes. And then Dan and I agreed Chunky Monkey from Ben & Jerry's.
Okay.
Top tier.
See, that's a more normal response.
That's banana ice cream.
I have never heard anyone say their favorite ice cream is banana ice cream.
Chunky Monkey.
That's banana. Like
Chunky
unique
Monkey.
Individual.
Yeah, people like Chunky Monkey for sure. Texter say in the 401, what about Mike Unwenu? You can take Mike Unwenu. I don't need
Please, right? Take him. Take his contract.
If it was up to, like, what
so
I
So who
keep
did
him?
You have?
May, Gonzalez, Henry, Jones, White, Bentley, and I threw Douglas on at the end.
So Barmore, Unwenu, Duggar, those guys are all gone. Everybody they gave $50 million to last offseason, you
Duggar
want no part.
Definitely
of.
Can go. Barmore, I might keep. Peppers, bye. Barmore, I didn't think of him, but also he looks like a bit of a shell of himself since he's come back.
He, yeah.
I feel bad because he was, you know, out of condition, obviously, but Would I go crazy to protect him from an expansion draft right now? No, I wouldn't. I'm sorry. I like him too. I like all athletes named Christian. Most of them anyway. And
well, they have a great one. You already kept one of those.
I already kept one of those. By the way, Christian Ellis is rising up that board.
He had a nice play the other day. That tackle he made.
That tackle
like,
on.
Boom.
Yeah. And wrangling Kyler Murray in the open field like that is no easy thing. So, yeah, props to him there. But really, I mean, Ramondre, no. Anthony Jennings is another net. Like, no. Nope. Austin Hooper, no.
Bryce Behringer, you don't need a punter?
None of the rookies. I can find another punter like Joey Sly. I don't know if I'll ever find the punter as ripped as him. I was watching the game with my dad. He's like, who is that? I was like, it's a kicker. He goes, oh, he looks like a middle linebacker, and he does.
He's thick.
But, yeah, don't need him. Don't need really anybody, you know? Like, you're a bad team. You're a very, very bad team. And when you re-sign all your players and then they come out and this is how they respond to getting paid, then, yeah, I don't need to keep them. Goodbye. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Armand, who is out in Lexington. Go ahead, Armand. Whoa, Armand with the phone. Hey, buddy, what's up?
Get the roof down?
Yeah, what's going on here?
How you doing, guys?
Good, Armand. What's up?
Driving home on the pike, and I'm sitting in traffic, so why not talk Patriots football?
There you go.
I want to just go in an opposite direction here, and if you've already mentioned this, I apologize. I only turned you on about 10 minutes ago, but
damn you.
I would be willing to give the coaching staff another year to kind of get their feet wet and get some experience. I think the problem is Elliott Wolf. I am extremely nervous going into this offseason with all this cap money and these high picks and knowing that Elliott Wolf is managing the personnel. It scares me. And before I hang up and listen to you guys, can I give you my 10?
Sure.
Okay. Defense, White, Barmore, Ellis, Bentley when he comes back, because I think he's solid. Peppers, switching over to the offense. Okay. Obviously. Oh, and Gonzalez. Obviously, Drake. Hunter Henry. Mm-hmm. I like Gibson. I think Gibson is worth keeping. And I want to, and I'm going to throw in my wild card, which is I would keep Behringer because finding a good punter is not as easy as you think it is.
Kind of is, Armand. Like, listen, all due respect to you. They've cycled through punters however many times, you know? Like, come on.
Antonio Gibson, nice little player.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like a one-year free agent rental type. You can dime a dozen in the NFL.
You can find another Antonio Gibson. And I like what he's done this
year. He's nice.
Like,
he's
I like
fine.
What Zeke Elliott did last year, too. You know, the alternative running
nice
back situation, fine. But, yeah, I mean, keep him. If someone wants to take him in the expansion draft, you know, it's nice knowing
if
you.
If Antonio Gibson's in your top 10 keepers of your roster,
brutal.
You're porked.
Oh, big time.
Absolutely porked. There is one text I needed to read from the 603. I like that segment. Good work, Hart.
All right. Well done. Texting the line yourself, which is a new low for this
show. I do not have a 603. I don't even know where the 603 is.
It's New Hampshire. 617-779.
It's Loserville, where you're from. Ooh, heartburn.
When we return, the Boston Red Sox, are they still hard at work? Or are they going to let some of these free agents slide through the cracks? They haven't signed anybody free agent-wise yet. They've made a trade. Who's still on the table? And what does ESPN think? We'll get to that next. He's right about that. That was Craig Breslow on MLB Network Radio earlier today. It's Christian Arkin. It's Andy Hartz, WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here this evening. You know what I finally got around to watching? The 2004 Netflix Red Sox thing.
I still haven't watched it.
I finally watched it. It was very good.
It was watching?
Very, very good. I'd recommend it, yeah.
Three episodes?
It's three episodes, yes.
How much time? 3 hours?
The first episode's about 03. Grady Little's still in it. He's very much in it, which I, you know.
That one's tough to stomach. It's well put together, but it's tough.
It's done very well. The Grady Little stuff, I feel bad for that guy. But John Henry had a real zinger about Grady Little.
God, how bad does he look in that, by the way?
Grady Little?
John Henry.
Yeah.
Oh, I was trying to figure what if we could fire him in the midst. Shut up.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Come on, dude. And Grady, I mean, you know. Grady Little, it's amazing. Grady Little, this was 20 years ago. He looks exactly the same. He looked like an old man back in 2004, and he still looks like an old man now. But he doesn't look like he's aged at all. He still looks like the same guy, and he talks the same. Oh, same old accenters. And, yeah, so the first episode's all about 03. The second episode is 2004, the offseason, and putting the team together. And then the third one's about the run to the World Series. Spoiler alert, they win the World Series in the end.
Damn it.
You haven't seen it yet.
Haven't seen it. It's going to really ruin the peak there.
But I did, watching it, Theo's very prominent in it. And I remember talking with Jones, and Jones being so excited that Theo was rejoining Fenway Sports Group and that he was leaving the Major League Baseball and he was going to be part of Fenway Sports Group. And you watch, he's going to motivate John Henry and Werner and all of them, and they're going to get back to the old way of doing things and blah, 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 all that stuff. And I'm watching it and remembering those glory days and remembering how they went to Arizona and had Thanksgiving dinner with the Shillings and, you know, all that stuff, and trading Nomar in season, which they did, and how big of a deal that was and who they traded him for and how ballsy of a move that was at the time and sort of all this other stuff, and just thinking, man, this feels like a million years ago. This doesn't feel like 20 years ago. This feels like 100 years ago. This feels like it happened before I was born, based on the way that they're treating the team now, you know? And I was in college when the Red Sox broke the curse, but, like, thinking about it now, sort of looking back on it now after all this time, it's like unrecognizable, this group and the way that they treat this baseball team.
Yeah, it's I think most Red Sox fans would be happy to go back to the old way of doing business.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was so much more enjoyable, even when you didn't necessarily
win. Even Dombrowski years. I mean, I'd go back to that. Like, you know, we don't have to go back to Theo in 04 or even, you know, Charrington or anything. Charrington ended up winning one, too. But I'd go back to Dombrowski in that era in a second. If I could snap my fingers and do that, I'd go back there right now. Or at least have that be the way that they do business still in 2024. But it just seems like it's over, you know? Like, they're not. That's not what they're doing. Yeah.
And some of us that may have been naive and little, gullible, and Andy, that's me.
LGA.
Yep. Thought maybe you were taking steps in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And to date, it hasn't come to fruition. I mean, I know they got Crochet, and everybody's excited about Crochet, and you got a legit. I'm not going to compare him to anybody they may have traded for in the past. That became a very key part of this organization. You got a legit pitcher. But where is step two and step three, plan B and plan C?
Good question.
Because we're still just kind of waiting and watching. And I continue to say, was that trade the cheap way out? Is that why they did it? Because immediately you had Breslow telling Jones and Keefe that, yeah, no, we're not really going to be talking about an extension with him. That's not really
not right away. You right. know, we have a couple years before we have right. to get into all that talk.
So he's a cheap alternative. You found a cheap alternative to make a splash, to get some headlines, to excite some fans, and you get credit for that without spending any money, mm-hmm. just spending assets, prospects, and now you've done nothing since. Because some of us were like, thought that was like the ball start. The little, I talk about you making a snowman with your son.
Yes.
You know, the little snowball that you start, and then you do it in your hands, and then you put it in the ground, and you right. start to roll it. That's
and then
what
it becomes
I thought.
A boulder yes. rolling down the street. Yeah.
That's what I thought Crochet was. He mm-hmm. was the little hand packed snow. And then we haven't done anything with it. We're just holding that in our hand. We haven't started rolling it and making it any bigger.
Yeah.
Then they took a flamethrower to the snowball.
Yeah, then they took a flamethrower and everything melted, and we're just all sitting here in wet pants.
That's right.
John Henry with the flamethrower. Yeah. Basically, ESPN has a list of predictions for the upcoming free agent class, or this current free agent class, I should say, that we're looking at right now. This is Dave Schoenfield, who is a senior baseball writer at ESPN.com, and he lists all the free agents and their best bets for who's going to sign them, and then they make a prediction of who it actually is going to be.
Alex best Bregman. Bets is in quotes. Let me just clarify yes. real quick. We've been through this, and when you list as many best bets as they have...
Well, it's bets plural, in fairness, but yeah.
Yeah, but if I ask you your best bets for NFL Sunday mm-hmm. and you give me eight games, I'm going to say, then you don't really have best bets.
True.
You're giving me more than half the schedule.
Alex Bregman is prominently featured in this article. The projected contract for him, according to Schoenfield, is 6 years, $187 million. That's 30-plus per year. The best bets to sign him are the Yankees, Mets, Red Sox, Tigers, Phillies, Astros, and Washington Nationals. So a lot of teams interested in Bregman. Here is what Schoenfield writes. Nothing is more exciting than an old-fashioned bidding war between the Red Sox and the Yankees, just like how it used to be on a regular basis. Bregman's peak years came in 18 and 19, but he still averaged a 4.5 war over the last three seasons, and to use a cliche, he's the type of winning, grinding player that any team would love to sign. The Red Sox don't need a third baseman. With Bregman, they'd have to move Devers to first base or DH if they don't trade Tristan Casas, but they undoubtedly find this stat hard to ignore. Among players with at least 95 regular season plate appearances at Fenway, Bregman has the highest OPS out of everyone. Higher than Ted Williams. Higher than Lou Gehrig. Higher than David Big Poppy Ortiz. Bregman has hit .375 with a .490 OPS or .490 on base and a .750 slugging. That's Barry Bonds numbers right there in 21 games at Fenway. Small sample size, but Bregman's pull approach is perfectly suited for the Green Monster, much more so than it would be at Yankee Stadium. Two benefits for the Red Sox in signing Bregman: he improves the infield defense for a ground ball heavy staff. He also brings a right-handed bat to the lineup that leans very heavy lefty with Devers, Cassis, Duran, Abreu, and Yoshida. Alex Cora, a coach with Houston in 2017, has reached out to Bregman and no doubt tried to convince him of Boston's bright future with all its young talent. For a player who has made 8 consecutive trips to the postseason, that is an enticing pitch. Prediction: Bregman signs with the Red Sox. That's what Schoenfield says.
Yes, and I'll take it. But this, to me, is a lukewarm move.
Sounds like you've warmed up a little bit. You were anti-Bregman earlier on in the show.
Beggars can't be choosers, I would say, would be my approach. I do have significant concerns that a $30 million a year contract for him will become an albatross, will become a reason why they can't do other things, and excuse and all of that. I hate that idea. And I hate the idea that, as they said, his best seasons were 18 and 19.
Right.
What year are we going to be playing next year?
2025.
Doesn't that seem like a pretty big gap there when you're talking about best seasons?
It does.
2025.
It's not like he sucks now.
No.
You know, but if he, in the last 6 years, if he's completely fallen off the map and below the Mendoza line, then yeah, I'd say fine. You shouldn't do this.
He's got half the doubles, half the home runs. His batting average is down. His walks are... 2019, he had 119 walks. He had 44 last year.
Hmm.
Like, some of the numbers are down.
Career low OPS last year.
Markedly.
Yeah, but he's better than Ted Williams. I don't know if you just heard me or not. He's better than Ted Williams.
I'm sorry. I'm on board.
I also ask a question.
Sure.
Those 95 at-bats, is there any way that they might be heavily swayed towards the 18 and 19 seasons or something?
Probably, yeah.
Is there like...
I don't know. I don't know how many games per year he's played at Fenway.
But the good news is they didn't have trash cans at Fenway in 18 and 19 either way. So I don't think that would sway it that much. But no, I
plus Cora was doing it for him. He's like, whoops, sorry, I forgot what team I was on.
I just think the idea of Bregman is better than maybe the player you're actually going to get on a continuous basis. And I know Cora's all in on him. Cora is like his personal agent. It's like he's trying to get him signed, inflated, the whole thing. He talked about a winner and leadership and clubhouse and defense. Like, he is totally all in on Bregman, and I guess that's great. If he believes he's that kind of guy on some level, maybe you have to trust him to be worth what you're going to invest in him. I just don't know if you're going to get 6 years and $180 million worth of value out of him.
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, Dan?
There's a comparison in my head that I cannot get out of my head. So last year for Alex Bregman, 145 games, .260 average, 26 home runs, 75 runs batted in. Good, not great. I know the defense, all that kind of stuff. Numbers from 2021, this player was 28 years old, .251 average, .801 OPS, 24 home runs, 75 runs batted in. Good defender. We were sold that same bill of goods on Trevor Story three years ago. That's the comp that comes to my
similar.
Head. This feels like Trevor Story 2.0 to me. I think there are better ways to spend the money.
And I think they will sign this guy expecting us to react like he's a superstar, this is a massive deal.
Like it is 2019.
Just like it was with Story. They thought Story was a bigger deal. Now, and I mean, the comparison is, it also, I don't know if it upsets Devers, but it affects Devers, right?
Yeah.
It changes Devers and moves him off his position, much the way eventually Trevor Story kind of ushered Bogarts out the door after being a second baseman for a year and that whole thing. No, I think the comparisons are very accurate, and I also think we look at the Trevor Story contract and say, and I know injuries are a side issue. They're
but it's an aging player. That's the same thing you're signing up for.
Who's not that good.
Yeah. Right.
Who doesn't have star power. My jersey test. How many kids you think are going to buy a Bregman jersey?
Right away, not many.
None.
But if he plays well, he could, you know, there's not a lot of other jerseys
well?
To buy right
if
now.
If he has the year he has last year, if he hits 30 home runs and he...
If he hits 30 home runs, people's going to buy his jersey, yes.
A lot of Tyler O'Neill jerseys out there?
Probably, yeah.
You
well,
sure about that?
I mean, he did. Who bought him in season? Sure, yeah. He was one of the best players in the team this past year.
Yeah.
I think Duran and O'Neill sold jerseys this year. I don't think a lot of other people did.
If you work for the Red Sox, can you send me a number on how many Tyler O'Neill jerseys were sold? Because I don't think many.
The New York Yankees just made a trade. We don't have to have breaking news for this. But the Yankees just made a trade. Cody Bellinger has been traded from the Chicago Cubs to the New York Yankees. Bellinger, a former MVP with 2 years remaining on his contract and an opt-out after 2025, will join the Yankee outfield as New York continues to be aggressive post Juan Soto. That is per Jeff Passan. Bellinger and Cash goes to the Yankees. Right-handed reliever Cody Poteet
goes to the Chicago Cubs. I'm not familiar with Mr. Poteet, but it is Cody, a trade Cody for Cody. Going.
Why do you say Poteet so funny?
I don't know. It's a funny.
Remember Hank Poteet?
I do remember Hank Poteet.
Steelers and then Patriots.
Yeah.
Hank Get Beat, they called him.
And he did, often. So there you go.
So Bellinger is a lot like Bregman. He was good like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Really good.
He was the best player in the league 5 years ago, and he was the rookie of the year. Like, he's got a – but, yeah, lately he's 29, 30 years old, I think, now, and last year not so great, certainly with the Cubs, I think. He was with the Dodgers.
Yes.
Yeah, and he just got traded from the Cubs. So, yeah, that's an interesting move there. Certainly he's no Juan Soto, but they are trying to fill that gap as the Yankees making a move to shore up their outfield. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we return – Robert Kraft, Jonathan Kraft, stealing the show in the CBS broadcast of the Patriots and Cardinals game. What were they talking about? What sort of notes were they taking? And what does this mean for the organization going forward that these guys are now getting in the weeds when it comes to play calling and critiquing the play calling? We'll get into all of that with your phone calls next.